on chapter 10, text number 16 and 17. So we have 16 written here on the board, and we'll chant it. Vaktum arhasya sheshena divya hi atma vibhutayah yabhir vibhuti bhir lokan imam stvam vyapyatishthasi. There's also text number 17. We don't have it written on the board, so I'll just sing it myself. Katham vidyamaham yogim stvam sada parichintayan keshu keshu cha bhaveshu chintyosi bhagavan maya. The word to word for that is katham, how vidyamaham shall I know, yogin, O supreme mystic, tvam, you, sada, always, parichintayan, thinking of, keshu, in which, cha, also, bhaveshu, natures, chintaya, asi, you are to be remembered, bhagavan, O supreme, maya, by me. Translation of the 16th verse. Please tell me in detail of your divine opulences by which you pervade all these worlds. Purport by His Divine Grace Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. In this verse, it appears that Arjun is already satisfied with his understanding of the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna. By Krishna's grace, Arjun has personal experience, intelligence, and knowledge, and whatever else a person may have through all these agencies. And he has understood Krishna to be the Supreme Personality of Godhead. For him, there is no doubt. Yet, he is asking Krishna to explain his all-pervading nature. People in general, and the impersonalists in particular, concern themselves mainly with the all-pervading nature of the Supreme. So Arjun is asking Krishna how he exists in his all-pervading aspect through his different energies. One should know that this is being asked by Arjun on behalf of the common people. Text number 17, translation. O Krishna, O Supreme Mystic, how shall I constantly think of you, and how shall I know you? In what various forms are you to be remembered, O Supreme Personality of Godhead? In the purport, it's a long purport, I just try to summarize. First, Prabhupada says that as per Krishna's own words, Krishna is not revealed. Krishna chooses to hide himself from non-devotees, people who don't believe in him. Yoga maya samavrita. Naham prakasham sarvasya. Yoga maya samavrita. He says that I am covered by my yoga maya potency. Then he says that Arjun here is asking for the benefit of the other people, for the common masses. So devotees can know Krishna, but what about others? They don't know who is Krishna. They don't know about his different energies, about how great he is. So for their benefit today, in these two verses, Arjun is requesting him, please tell me in different ways, how shall I remember you? Keshu keshu cha bhaveshu. And keshu keshu cha bhaveshu, our acharyas explain. The words keshu keshu cha bhaveshu refer to material nature. The word bhava means physical things. Because the materialists cannot understand Krishna spiritually, they are advised to concentrate the mind on physical things and try to see how Krishna is manifested by physical representations. So this is the question that Arjun has for Krishna today. So today in this verse, in addition to the different things that Arjuna has exposed himself, Arjuna has shown honest inquiry. Arjuna, in the first chapter, when he gives different reasons to Krishna for not fighting, he has shown, in one sense, his illusion also. Krishna put him under illusion for our benefit, so that we can benefit by the answers that Arjun receives from Krishna. So he has shown different facets throughout the Gita. Sometimes he catches on to certain words that Krishna speaks. Krishna explains something. Says, oh, you explained like this, but how do I understand it like that? So he shows his alertness also. He is listening very attentively to Krishna. In today's two verses, we come across another such quality of Krishna, which is compassion. So yes, he has certain doubts and he is asking them, and we understand because of his exalted position that Krishna chose him to be the recipient of the supreme knowledge of Gita. He can't be in illusion. But then Lord has purposefully put him under illusion so that he asks questions. The mother-in-law sometimes instructs her own daughter, but those instructions are not meant for the daughter. Those instructions are meant for the newly wedded and newly come to their home daughter-in-law. But if the daughter-in-law is directly addressed, is directly instructed, because she has not yet developed the love, she has not yet developed the relations with the mother-in-law, she might get offended. That's why the mother-in-law sometimes chastises or instructs her own daughter, but meant for somebody else. Similarly, Arjun has been put into this position for our benefit, so that we can understand, we can learn about the Lord, although he is the direct recipient of that knowledge. But here in today's verses, Arjuna is very much satisfied. 9 chapters are over. Out of 18 chapters, half of the knowledge is already over. 9th chapter was the most confidential knowledge. So whatever was the most secret of all secrets has been given. Raja Vidya, Raja Guhyam has already been explained. So Arjuna already, he is in an exalted position. Krishna has already told him very nice detailed knowledge about himself. So now in the 10th chapter, he is asking these questions for benefit of the common people. And the acharya has explained. Common men, in absence of recognition of Krishna's special position, fail to see him spiritually, fail to recognize his spiritual nature. But what are common men like you and me exposed to? We are exposed to this world. We are exposed to the physical things in this world. So Krishna today is obliged. Krishna today is requested. Keshu keshu cha bhaveshu chintosi bhagavan maya. In what all forms in this material world can we remember you? Can I remember you? Can somebody else remember you? Because for ordinary people, the spiritual world, God, these are faraway concepts. People are already godless. They don't accept the existence of God. What to speak of accepting God as the supreme person? Just conceiving of a person with unlimited energies, of a person who is unlimited in all his aspects, is too much for the common man. So for such people's benefit today, Arjuna is asking this question. He's saying, please tell me in detail. Please tell me in detail of your divine opulences by which you pervade all these worlds. Just some time back in text number 7 of the same chapter, Krishna has given him something. He has told him something by which he is inspired to ask these questions. In text number 7 just now, Krishna has said, one who is factually convinced of this opulence and mystic power of mind engages in unalloyed devotional service. Of this there is no doubt. So just now Krishna has told him how, if somebody is really factually convinced, if he has firm conviction in who Krishna is, in what powers he has, of how great he is, then the process of devotional service will start. The devotional service will come later. If I tell you to say, I tell you the president of this country is Mr. X and we should all try to please him. So if somebody here does not know who that Mr. X is, where does he stay, how will he satisfy him? How will he please him? How will he serve him? That's a question that comes later. First, at least you have to know about that person. You have to know who that person is, where he stays and like that. And then there is a question of actually approaching him, actually serving him, actually developing a relationship with him. That comes so much later. So the Sammam Bonam, the most desirable thing that is desired, that is recommended, is actually developing a relationship with the Lord. We have relationships with so many people, so many objects in this world. But we just have to repose that tendency to have relationships, to love, in the supreme object of all love, the supreme source of all love, and that is the Lord. But for that to happen, we have to know who He is. So that is why Krishna says that you have to be factually convinced. It's not just theoretical knowledge. And so, taking a cue, taking a hint from that statement of Krishna, Arjun today is asking, please tell me, in what ways can I know you? Yabhir vibhuti bhir lokan. Vibhuti, this word means energies. Like a rich person, say the biggest industrialist in Bombay. What are his energies? His energies is his power of money. With that money, he can control things. He can control people. He can control situations. So that is his energy. He uses his energy in different ways to get things done. For a person who is physically powerful, his vibhuti, his energy, will be his physical strength. For the world's best chess player, his vibhuti is his intelligence. He may not be strong physically, he may not be very rich. So everyone has his energies. But then here, Krishna is the Supreme Lord. So he has the best of all energies to the full. So he says, now you tell me, certainly I accept that you have a spiritual form and you are there in the spiritual world. All that I accept. But since you are the Supreme Lord, since you have multifarious energies, since there is nothing that is hidden from you, there is nothing that is not known to you, there is nothing where you do not exist. So now you tell me, for the benefit of common man, how to his ordinary mundane vision are you perceivable? Like that. So one could understand this. In the 7th chapter, Krishna has said, Maya tatam idam sarvam jagad avyakta murtina matsthani sarva bhutani na teshu chaham avasthita. He says, Maya tatam idam sarvam, I pervade this entire cosmic manifestation, jagad avyakta murtina, in my impersonal form. Not in my personal form. In my personal form, I am in the spiritual world. But in the form of my energies, in the form of my jurisdiction, I was giving this example last time, how there is a police commissioner, how there is a district magistrate, how there is a high court justice, the person. He sits in his office. He has his own residence. He has his own people around him who serve him personally. But under his jurisdiction, the whole city falls. Anything that happens in the city, which is not as per the law, is reported to him. And then he takes charge of that. People whom you see on the streets, people whom you see going by on the streets, they are subject to his jurisdiction. They cannot disobey the laws that are created by the magistrate, that are enforced by different departments like the police department and all. So although he is not personally present, you can't defy him. You can't disobey him. Similarly, the Lord is in the spiritual world, but by his energies, he pervades this world. Idam hi vishwam bhagwan ivetaro. Bhagavatam 5th canto, 1st chapter, 1st canto, 5th chapter. Narad Muni explains this to Vyasadeva, that idam hi vishwam bhagwan ivetaro. Says, this vishwa, this material world is also non-different from the Lord. How? Because he is present here through his energies. Now, one way to understand this more, in a better way, consider a tree. From the tree, different branches come. Leaves on those branches come. So the branches, the leaves, the fruits that come on the tree. One could say they are emanation from the tree. They come out of the tree. So tree was there originally, then fresh branches come, then fresh leaves come, fresh fruits come. So in one sense, the branches, the fruits and all, they are later additions. They are emanations from the tree. However, when you talk of a tree, you don't leave out the branches, you don't leave out the leaves. When I'm talking of a tree, if I ask you to draw a picture of a tree, certainly it will not be just the trunk. A complete tree, a usual tree, the usual definition of a tree would necessarily include different branches, different leaves on those branches, different fruits on those branches, some flowers maybe. Yet, they are emanations. So simultaneously, one could say that the leaves, the branches and all such things, they are simultaneously emanations from the tree, yet they are inseparable from the tree. If you take out those leaves and branches, you don't call it a tree. You call them leaves and branches. Yet on the tree, when connected to the tree, they are part of that tree. Another example that is given is the hands and the legs of the body. When considered separately, we call them the hands, the legs, like that. But you know, they grow out of the same body. Initially, when the hands or legs are not there in the fetus, just one mass, but then slowly hands develop, legs develop. So the hands and the legs, they are in one sense inseparable parts of the body, yet they are emanations from the body. So simultaneously, they are one and the same. Similarly, the Lord has his own spiritual abode. The Lord has his own spiritual existence. And this material world has come forth from him. Yet, when we talk about the entire cosmic manifestation, when we talk about the entire existence, this material world is also counted as part of it. Now, the interesting thing is, just consider, there is a tree and you cut off some leaves and branches from it. How does it look, or what happens to those leaves and branches? They just die off. They wither off. They don't prosper. They don't grow further. Somebody's hands and legs cut off. Gory sight. Looks ghastly. Similarly, this material world, if you take it separate in vision from the Supreme Lord, if you don't consider as an emanation from the Supreme Lord, if you consider it as a separate existence from the Supreme Lord, it just becomes mundane world. It just becomes without any value. It's like a rich man's home. Everything there is very costly. All the statues he has are costly. The pens, sometimes they cost thousands of rupees. Everything in a rich man's home is costly. Yet when it is discarded, when he throws it out, it loses its value. We don't value the dust from a rich man's home, is it? The dust from a rich man's home and the dust from a poor man's home is the same. Because it's dust. It's something that is discarded. It's something that is rejected. Yet that same thing, when it was in the home of that rich man, it had certain value. Similarly, we understand that nothing in this existence has, in one sense, separate existence from the Supreme Lord. Everything is connected to the Supreme Lord. Directly, indirectly. One way or the other, it has to be connected to the Supreme Lord. And when this connection is removed, when we fail to see the divine hand of God in things around us, then just like the hands that are cut off, just like the leaves and the branches that are cut off, they lose their value, they just wither off. Interestingly, the most famous evolutionary biologist, they are celebrating his 200th birth anniversary this year. He did just that. Before him, there was understanding that certain species of life or certain traits, certain characteristics in people, they make them more suited for existence. And some qualities and some characteristics of living beings, because they are not best suited for existence, they wither out, they die like that. But there was presence of the Lord in everyday working of nature. The idea was that the Supreme Lord controls nature and the nature in turn controls the material world. So how do you get rains? Rains you get by clouds. But who controls the clouds? There's a person in charge. Demigod in control, in charge of those water department, the water department, the piping transportation department. But what this person did is, he just removed that divinity. He just removed the Lord's connection. Any supernatural connection he removed out of it. And he just put the whole emphasis on nature. If you read his book, Origin of Species, he talks about this. He says, some paragraph he writes like this. If you carefully analyze, nature scrutinizes living beings and chooses the best ones. He writes like this. Nature scrutinizes living beings and chooses the best ones. And the ones that are not chosen, the ones that are not selected, because the process is called natural selection, evolution of life by natural selection. That is his theory. Somehow today the most accepted theory that explains life. But he says nature scrutinizes life. Now scrutiny, the act of scrutinizing, the act of inspecting, scrutiny means inspection, selection. It's a conscious act. A machine does not scrutinize. A machine has to be programmed to scrutinize. There has to be life to scrutinize. And even if we accept that nature scrutinizes as a material machine, there has to be a person who has asked it to do so. So it appears contradictory. It's like saying this couch, this Vyasasan, it does something. It can't do anything. The wood on the floor, it can't do anything. It's dead matter. So nature, he is just taking the concept of God, but then removing God out of the picture. He's putting the whole emphasis on nature, material nature. He's saying material nature scrutinizes. How can material nature scrutinize? He himself is saying material nature, but material nature is dead matter. How can it scrutinize? So the concept you cannot remove. But what you can do is, in your anger against God, in your envy against God, you remove him out of the picture and you ascribe. You say somebody else is doing that same task. So saints and sages, they are saying Supreme Lord is in control. Under him everything is happening. And then today's modern scientists say, no, material nature is doing everything. Act does not change because you see things happening in this world. Yet, what you can do is, you can just remove the person in charge and you can place the whole thing on some machinery. That's what they are doing. Well, what is the result? The result is godlessness. The result is exploitation of nature. The same planet on which we are living today, we ourselves are harming. How strange. How difficult to understand. It's like we stay in a home and we have 3 or 4 rooms in our home. We clean up the dust, the garbage in one room, take it and dump it in the other room. Same home, but at least the room in which I am staying, that does not have garbage. The room in which I stay is clean. What about the other members of the family? They are using other rooms. They are your own family members. Are not you causing trouble to them? No, but my room is clean. We are on the same planet. Our country, other countries, we are on the same planet. The pollution that we cause to the atmosphere, it affects us also, certainly, and it affects our brothers, our sisters. It affects, what to speak of the present generation, it affects the future generations. The water that we are contaminating is not only drunk by us today, but we are polluting it forever. Our own children, the next generation of this country, the next generation of other countries, they are going to drink this polluted water. All the air pollution that we are doing, we are harming ourselves, our children. We don't know how long, how much damage we have already done. How many generations from now are going to suffer because of that. But why is all this happening? There's no divinity. It's just a, things are just happening on their own. If you consider some object worshipable, we have this symbols, pair of symbols, kartal, material object, made up of brass metal. But because it is used in the service of the Lord, there is respect. Because we use it to sing the kirtan of the holy name of the Lord, there is respect. We'll never keep it on the floor. Now there are so many objects made up of the same metal, maybe sometimes of the same shape. But we are not so careful with it. People who are spiritually advanced, certainly they are careful. It's a part of culture. If you just look back, you know, our parents have taught us not to touch anything with our leg. Unconsciously we do that. Sometimes we are sitting in a train, sometimes we are sitting somewhere, and unconsciously we touch our feet to somebody. Immediately we do like this. What is that? Nobody knows now. The understanding is gone. But somehow, you know, I've seen even modern youngsters today, dressed in Western clothes, everything is Western about them. But when they accidentally touch their leg to something or somebody, they immediately do like this. What is that? So my legs are not something to touch you. My legs are something that I use for walking on the road. It is in contact with all the dirt and garbage on the road. I should not touch you with it. So everything is respected. Every person is respected actually, as per our culture. And if we touch our feet, immediately we do like this. Nobody knows why we do that now, today. But the reason is this, that we respect everything. Why? We see everyone as the Lord is residing in everyone's heart. So if Lord is there in your heart, your heart, your heart, He is in the dog of every species of life, where is the question of killing it? Where is the question of harming it? Where is the question of even touching it by your foot? But you take that divinity out of it, you take the Lord's presence out of it, you are just a mass of carbon and hydrogen atoms. You are just a mass of something put together, and there is some life. All respect for life, all respect for nature, all respect for everything is lost just when we fail to see the connection with the Lord. The hands and the legs cut from the body, no use. Nobody even looks at it. Discarded, ghastly. People abhor that sight. Branches and leaves cut off from the tree, no use. At the most, you can burn it. So similarly, when we see this world around us as separate from the Lord, there's no connection of this world with the Lord, we tend to exploit it. We tend to use it for our own sense gratification. That is why these questions are pertinent. Somebody could question this. You know, already there is so much detailed knowledge about Krishna, who He is. Ninth chapter explains so many things about Krishna. Seventh chapter explains so many things about Krishna. Krishna says, if He please hear from me as I explain to you everything. Now if all that is described, where is the question of Arjuna asking, please tell me now that you have given detailed knowledge about you as a person, about your devotees. Chatushloki Bhagavad Gita has already been explained. The four most important verses of Bhagavad Gita, they were just covered now. Now he's asking, now tell me how to see you in this material world. So after understanding some very high knowledge, now he's asking again for people like you and me. Why? It's important. Not that because his questions pertain to the material world, they are not important. Why? Because he's a devotee. He knows what to ask. He'll ask the best things. Why? Because the person in front of him is the Supreme Lord. The Supreme Lord can give him the best answers. So the best questions and the best answers. The result is the best knowledge comes out. 5,000 years later, people like you and me also can benefit from it. So in the coming verses, then Krishna explains how he can be understood, how he can be perceived in things of this world. He says of the mountains, I am Himalayas. There is some series of verses now. After some time they will start. So he, you know, when you see mountains, they are so overwhelming. There's so much awe generated in your heart when you see these big, big, huge mountains. The normal Bombayites, we don't have much mountains around us. When we go to Pune, when we go to Nasik, just a little bit outside Bombay and you see those mountains. They're so huge. It takes so much time for the vehicles or the trains to cross that mountain range. What to speak of the Himalayas? Himalayas are huge. It's a whole range of mountains. It's not just one or two mountains. Enormous. The tallest mountain is there. The widest mountain is there. He says, of all the mountains, I am the Himalayas. Why Himalayas? Because they are the greatest. So, I'll not cover those verses today. But the point that he's going to explain is, when you see all the mountains and then when you see the Himalayas, you know, this is the best mountain. These are the biggest mountains. These are the most awe-inspiring mountains. So when you see something greatest among different categories, you see animals and who's the best animal? You see birds and who's the best bird? You see mountains and who's the best mountain? So that greatness in that bird, that animal, that mountain is me. Not that Himalayas are Krishna. Not that the most greatest bird is Krishna. But that empowerment to be the greatest has been given by the Lord. He says, I am the taste of water. Now, water is such a nice drink. When we are thirsty, nothing else can quench our thirst. We just take a sip of water and we feel so nice. Not only is our thirst quenched, but also nourished. We feel fresh when we take a glass of water. So I am the taste of water. So every time you drink water, you can be reminded of Krishna. Krishna makes it so easy for us to remember him. Don't have to be a big logician. Don't have to be a big expert in chanting mantras. Don't have to know the Vedic scriptures forward and reverse. Simple ways in this chapter, these verses will come where Krishna explains. You can know me, you can remember me in these simple ways. Whenever you drink a glass of water, just remember Krishna. Taste of water is Krishna. Makes it so easy for us. So when you have, in whatever you are doing then, if you have that connection of Krishna, if you remember Krishna, then where is the question of exploiting that thing? Where is the question of polluting that thing? Well, it reminds you of Krishna. If it reminds you about the Lord. In fact, you will learn to respect it. In fact, you will learn to preserve it. If you can see the hand of Krishna behind satisfying your thirst, you will preserve water. You will take care that it does not get polluted. You will take care that it does not get contaminated. You will take care that in fact it gets better and better for you, your coming generations. That is why this knowledge is important today. We have these travel agencies around us. Now there's a great deal of increase in travel industry. Many times we see these shops which advertise tours and travels. Many people are venturing out on these tours and travels. When you enter that shop, when you enter that store, you see these pictures, beautiful pictures of places around the world. Switzerland, Kashmir. So just seeing those pictures, you know, we feel so enchanted. We should go there. They have these catalogs. You want to go South India? So this is the catalog. You know. You can visit these places. There is this big lake here. There is this big mountain here. There is a big garden here. So many things they are giving. Now it's interesting. We are staying here in the city. Living a very comfortable life. Provided with all the modern amenities. Having all the luxuries. Or at least desiring to have those luxuries. Yet, once in a while, even this city-dwelling modern citizen of the world desires to go to the nature. He wants a break. So he's floating in luxuries. He's surrounded by all the best things that are possible. But they can't satisfy him. Somehow at the end of it, he wants a holiday. He wants to go to a hill station. Why a hill station? What is there in a hill station? Hill station is just an ordinary hill. There's some grass meadows there. Maybe there's some waterfall there. That's it. What is there in a hill station? But that is where his heart lies. That is where he's attracted to. Of course, because of his attachments, again he comes back here. But the point here to understand is that although he's surrounded by so many nice things, he's not satisfied. Because if he was satisfied by these things, he would never want to go outside the city. City is where all, you know, everyone tries to come. There's a great influx of people from the rural side of India to the city. Why? Because they think this is where all the money lies, this is where all the future lies. Everyone is coming here, but you ask a city dweller, would you like to spend the rest of your life here? No, he says. I would like to stay here, but once in a while I have to have an escape. I have to go out, refresh myself. When I go to these hill stations, when I go to these natural places, I feel fresh, I feel enlivened. Then again I can come back and continue. But forever staying in the city, not for me, not possible for me. That's why you have so many natural places which attract people from the cities. So just imagine, when you go to these places, why are they so beautiful? Most of these hill stations, they have a sunset point, they have a sunrise point. It's just a place on some hill, you go there, and you just watch the sun setting. You just watch the sun rising, is it not? Ever been to any hill stations where there are such spots? So just imagine, you know, you have everything that you would ever want here. Then you go to a hill station, you stay there, and mostly these places will be far away, even from the hill station. So you have to walk a long way, you go on top of a mountain, and then what do you see? Far across, you see the sun rising, slowly. And people go for that. People spend money for this. They'll go around the hill station visiting different spots. Again, at the end of the day, they'll go to sunset point. They'll go there and watch the sun setting. Beautiful sight. Why would anybody want to go to a place where things are not beautiful? Just that simple mass of light and heat, just when it rises and when it sets, is a source of attraction for so many people. There's so much beauty in nature. Yet that same beauty today, if we don't realize where it came from, what is the source of all that beauty, what is the source of all that power that is there, we'll exploit it. We'll use it, we'll misuse it, we'll waste it. But if we see that divine hand, which Arjuna is asking Krishna to explain, becomes nice. Become something worth respecting, worth preserving, worth maintaining. Just to conclude, when Prabhupada was explaining this once, our Acharya Srila Prabhupada was explaining this once to his followers, one follower asked, Prabhupada, you are saying that the pure devotee sees Krishna everywhere. There's a verse in the scriptures which says this. He says, स्थावर जंगम देखी न देखे तार मूर्ति सर्वत्र होइबे इष्ट देव स्फूर्ति. So this verse explains, स्थावर जंगम देखी न देखी तार मूर्ति. The pure devotee, when he sees some objects that are stationary and some living beings moving, he does not see their form. But सर्वत्र होए इष्ट देव स्फूर्ति, everywhere he sees Krishna. That is his supremely worshipable Lord for a pure devotee. So as per this verse, he sees Krishna everywhere. Prahlad Maharaj, his father was dead against Vishnu worship. You can't do that. Tried different ways to kill him, torture him, trouble him, did not work out. Finally, he took it to himself. He said, I have to settle this score myself. Wanted to kill him. He said, you are saying the Lord is everywhere. Is he there in this pillar? Prahlad said, yes. No, we have so many pillars around us. We never see anything. Hiranyakashipu there, standing right in front of Prahlad. He didn't see anything. He said, if he's there, let him come. Let him come and save you. Prahlad was still convinced about it.
So he is seeing Krishna everywhere. So this verse explains how the pure devotee sees Krishna everywhere. So this devotee, Prabhupada is explaining, the devotee asks Prabhupada, you are saying that the pure devotee sees Krishna everywhere. Is it not a confusing sight? Like right now we see a chair, a table, see floor, some other objects. You are saying a pure devotee sees sthavar jangam, stationary and moving. Everywhere he sees Krishna. Is it not confusing to see Krishna, 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 everywhere Krishna, you know? Is it not confusing? So Prabhupada answered this in a very nice way. He said, not like that. For instance, he said, in my room there are spectacles. There are my spectacles. Prabhupada had spectacles. He said, there are my spectacles. When you go into my room and when you see those spectacles, don't you remember me? Don't you see me? Because those spectacles belong to me. When you see my shoes, you remember me. So you see Prabhupada there. That these shoes belong to Prabhupada. Here we have Prabhupada's murti, and if you go there are kartas that Prabhupada has used. They are encased there in a nice casing if you go there. So there it's written, these are the kartas used by Srila Prabhupada. When we go and look at those kartas, we are remembering Prabhupada. That's why they are kept so nicely. Special kartas, used personally by him. So when we look at those kartas, we are reminded of Prabhupada. Similarly, because the pure devotee sees everything in connection with the Krishna, that's why he sees Krishna everywhere. Not that he is seeing Krishna, Krishna everywhere, Krishna, all faces everywhere covered, the form of Krishna. But he sees everything in relation to Krishna. He does not see anything that is independent of Krishna. So that's why a pure devotee is also the best environmentalist. He is also the best law-abiding citizen. Why will he break any law? Why will he spoil the environment? Yasyastir bhakti bhagavati akinchana sarvair gunair tatra samasate sura yatra harava abhaktasya kuto mahatguna manorathena sati dhavato bahi. So yasyasti bhaktir bhagavati akinchana, anybody who is a devotee of the Lord, a true devotee of the Lord, a sincere devotee of the Lord, sarvair gunair tatra samasate sura, all the good qualities will manifest in him automatically. Why? Because he is a devotee. And harava abhaktasya kuto mahadguna. On the other hand, if somebody is a non-devotee, how many good qualities will he have? Why? Because he is on the temporary platform. Manorathena asati dhavato bahi. So this is how we can understand to see the divine hand of Krishna in everything around us. And if we do that, we not only become the best devotee, but we also become the best in everything. We'll never exploit anything. We'll never waste anything. And that is why for our benefit, Arjun today has asked that Keshu Keshu Cha Bhaveshu, in what all things of this world should I see you? Chintosi Bhagavan Maya, can I remember you? Like that. So I'll stop here. If somebody has any questions, then we can take a few questions.
Hare Krishna. Prabhuji, in the beginning you said that God hides himself. God does not reveal himself before the non-devotees. I want to understand that God is present in everywhere, and God also hides to devotee and non-devotee. There is not something discrimination what like that. And in this Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has said that Jivera Swarupe Nitya Krishna Das, and God is present everywhere, like Prahlad Maharaj. Prahlad Maharaj, Narsingadev appeared to Hiranyakasipu. Hiranyakasipu is a non-devotee. But you said that God does not reveal, God hides himself. Is that something, I think, discrimination, or explain, please.
So yes, Lord Narasimhadeva appeared also in front of Hiranyakashipu. But he did not appear for Hiranyakashipu. Is it not? Hiranyakashipu did not call him. And he did not come on the call of Hiranyakashipu. He came to save Prahlad. So the cause of his appearance, although there may be many spectators, but the cause of his appearance is not Hiranyakashipu. Cause of his appearance is Prahlad. He came to save Prahlad. So he is there He got the benefit. He was his father, so he got his benefit. As far as hiding himself goes and the question of discrimination goes, any person, you for that matter, let's talk about you, because you have raised this question. You are sitting in your home, you have some photographs from your private life, when you were a small child, maybe you were a young boy in college and all. And somebody from your family, some close relative of yours, comes to your home, maybe your cousin brother. You're just sitting, and then he says, oh, you know, take out those old photographs. We spent a lot of time together in our childhood. And you are meditating on those photographs. You are discussing how you went there and this, like that. So you have those photographs. Now some person on the street comes. Will you share all that knowledge with him? Will you show him also your intimate photographs? Some person on the street, he comes. He rings a doorbell and he says, my dear friend, I want to see all those photographs. I heard you have a lot of photographs from your childhood. I heard a lot of photographs of your intimate moments are there with you, which you were discussing with your cousin brother. I also want to learn of all those things. Will you show all your intimate photographs and, you know, different things that you did in your childhood and when you were young to a person on the street whom you don't even know? Now, is that discrimination? Yes or no? It's not discrimination. It's not discrimination. To your cousin brother, who is very dear to you, you showed all those photographs and you discussed also. And to a person on the street, you don't show those photographs. And that's not discrimination. Does everyone else also agree with this? He says it's not discrimination. But no, my question is, alright, so he's saying, no, it's not discrimination, it's privacy. Privacy means you reserve the right to be intimate with some people whom you choose. Now we'll come to that again. I'm not stopping the answer here. But first we'll go step by step. So it means in our own lives, there are some people who are very dear to us. There are some people whom we know they are trustworthy. What's so special about your cousin brother that's not there in that person? Your cousin brother has 2 eyes or some 4 eyes, 6 eyes. Same features, but his heart is different. He knows his cousin brother is not there to harm him. He knows his cousin brother is his well-wisher. He knows his cousin brother loves him. So when cousin brother says, let's take out all those photos, let's just talk, he knows he's my well-wisher, he's my friend. He trusts him. So with him, he can bring out all those intimate photographs. He can discuss all the intimate things that you did. Person on the street, you don't know. He may be, he may not be. He may use certain information that is there in those photographs, certain things that happened in the photographs, and, you know, make wrong use of it. But once even that person proves that he is trustworthy, will you not accept him? Suppose he serves you properly, he works with you, and he proves that he is your well-wisher, that he does not have any ill intentions against you. Maybe after a period of time, say 10-20 years from now, he again asks you, can I get a peek at those photographs? Can I just see those photographs? Maybe you will, because now he has won your trust. So when Krishna says, Naham Prakasha Sarvasya Yogamaya Samavrita, he says, I hide myself from the envious people. People who say there is no God. He hides himself. For them, you can perceive him through all these manifestations in this universe. But his original, real, spiritual form, all the intimate details about him, where does he stay, what does he eat, what does he do throughout the day, what is the name of his friends, what is the mood between his mother and father and him, that is not revealed. Why should he reveal that to any person? The love that you have for your mother and father, you don't talk about it with strangers on the street. But with intimate people, you will do that. And when the person on the street also proves his sincerity of purpose, when he proves that he is a good person, he is a trustworthy person, you might do that in the future. So Krishna is a person. The reason why he is revealing all this knowledge to Arjuna is Pravakshami Anusuyave. He says that. He says, I am telling you all this knowledge because you are non-envious of me, because you love me. So if you become non-envious of Krishna, if you love Krishna, you will also receive that knowledge. Krishna will reveal himself to you. The only condition is you have to be non-envious. Only condition is you just have to love him. If you hate him, if you are out there using your intelligence to disprove his existence, with all the analysis of nature you have done, you take him out of the picture and say, nature scrutinizes. If you do all that, why will he reveal himself to you? Why should he reveal himself to you? So he hides himself. So that's his privacy. That's not discrimination. All right? Any other questions? We'll do one thing. It's already 8:35. The person who's supposed to sing is already there looking at me when I'm ending. He wants to sing Kirtan. We can take it personally. All right? So thank you so much for your patient listening. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai.